Hello and welcome to the Science Fiction Book Review Podcast, and this is our Christmas special. Normally at the start of this I say, when I'm reviewing something which isn't a book, I'm like, hey, this is not a book, but it is science fiction movie / radio play, whatever it is. Or if it's not science fiction, I'll say, well, it is still fantasy, but it's not science fiction, it's fantasy, but it's a book. Whereas this time we are not putting in any effort to talk about anything which is even remotely a book or even remotely science fiction. Joining me today is Juliana. Say hello.
Hello, everyone.
And we are going to be talking about, well, you already know because you've seen the title of this episode. It's the Mission Impossible Marathon. And the reason we are doing this is, Juliana, take it away.
Yeah, I was wishing that for Christmas to be a Mission Impossible Marathon, to watch all of them so I can finally watch part five.
Well, you wanted to watch part five earlier. We were like, hey, let's watch it. But it came out in the summer when we were traveling and it just didn't work out.
True.
And you had a broken foot and things, so it just didn't work out then. And also, you hadn't seen the fourth movie, Mission Impossible Ghost Protocol.
Right.
And I was like, oh, you should probably see that before you see number five, because it's an okay movie. It's pretty good. So that's what we did. We decided, actually, this Christmas, we have no other plans, so let's watch them all. And so, as a Christmas present for Juliana, I bought the box set of all five DVDs. No, not DVDs. What are they? Blu-rays.
Blu-rays. And spoiler, I already got them today on the 23rd.
Yes, because we thought we'll just do it all in one day. And we thought if we go all the way through the 24th, we can watch one in the morning, like two in the afternoon, and then two in the evening. But we've got other plans tomorrow evening, so we're putting in an evening of watching now. So the way this is going to work is we've just watched the first movie. We're going to talk about it for 5 minutes, then we're going to watch the next movie and talk about that for 5 minutes. I'm saying 5 minutes. It might end up a little bit more. Let's see if we can get this in. And then for Christmas Day, 25th, everyone can listen to what we think about Mission Impossible. So starting off with the first movie, have you seen this before, Juliana?
Yes, I have seen that. And I don't even know how often.
Yeah?
Yeah. I know I've seen it. I know I've seen it several times. I don't know the exact number.
I remember watching this one. I'm pretty sure I saw this one in the cinema. It came out in, what was it, 95? Let's have a look here. 96 it came out. So yeah, I probably saw this one in the cinema. I remember seeing it and I really enjoyed it. I did feel at the time, I thought, oh, this is a bit slow, because all of the trailers were like Tom Cruise being blown off a helicopter into a train and him swinging down through things. And I was... but even at the first time I watched it, I was kind of like, wow, this is quite slow, because it isn't, there is action in it, but it is very much a spy espionage double crossing kind of thing. So at the start of the movie, I was watching it today. It starts off in Prague and they're in Prague. Oh, is it in Kiev or whatever it is? But then they go to Prague and I was like, there is a lot of stuff going on in Prague. Like they're there and then they go for a meeting there. Normally in modern movies or more modern action movies, something will happen. There's an explosion. Someone dies and they're like, right. And now leave all that behind and go somewhere else.
Yes. But I really think that in my head I was kind of trying to remember, because the first one, I've watched it several times. It is quite a while ago, and other movies were in between other action movies, which take just really similar themes out of it.
Yeah.
So I was thinking through my head, okay, so they have this thing there and then it's not going to work. I remember that. And then something and somebody's not somebody who is supposed to be. And I tried to figure out who was who, and that wasn't quite.
But what I really did like about this is that it was so slow. And that's what I really liked.
Yeah.
All of the cinematography, Brian De Palma has got all those camera angles down really, really well. And it's slower, but slower in a kind of good way, if you know what I mean. It's like, but the stunts, when they come, are like, boom, this is a stunt. And this is one that you'll be remembering for a long time. And when you actually get to that point where when Tom Cruise comes down on the cables, you're like, wow, you understand why this has been parodied over and over again.
And also, I think what is so good in this movie is that you can see that the things are real.
Until,
right, okay, but still, like all the important stunt moment where I think, holy shit, oh my God, he really has to do it, and he has to be strong and capable.
Yeah.
He actually is doing it.
Yeah. We actually just watched the one of the special features while I was cooking here, and it was like, oh, the stunts in Mission Impossible. And you're like, oh, he is really dangling from that string. And when they explode that fish tank, he really is there. And the
running
fish,
for his
he
life.
He really is. And they say, oh, this bit was in Prague, but this bit was in a studio. And it's very well put together. And those are the moments that I really like, those things where you actually go, yes, this is actually someone dangling from a string. These are really actors next to each other here, even though sometimes they're people with masks on. But they're convincing, you know, oh, this is actually really interesting, and it makes a lot of sense. What I didn't like about it, though, is pretty much all of the moment when they go, let's go on a train, and everything that happens on the train at the end, or on the TGV, which, from London to Paris, first of all, there isn't one, which is always, that annoyed me in 1996, because I think I'd just been on the Eurostar when I'd seen this movie, or maybe it hadn't been open that long. I think it opened like 92 or something, so it's still a new thing. Oh, we're going into the tunnel. There's no, first of all, the TGV doesn't run to London, it's the Eurostar.
Yeah, it is a TGV. It's like a TGV. Just called special.
Yeah, it's a class of train, but it is a different star. It is a different build and stuff like that.
Yeah.
But then, of course, it's an American movie, and in America, there are no electrical trains with overhead cables. And that's just not something that is. So anytime that in America they want, oh, let's have a fight on top of a train, let's have this on top of a train, it's fine. You can just do that on top of a train because there's no cables. Whereas in Europe, there's always electric. Well, not always. Anytime that there's any intercity express, like the ICE in Germany or the intercity trains or the TGV, there's always overhead cables because it just takes so much power and it all comes through there. And there's a helicopter flying along. And pretty much all of that is so stupid. However, you know what? I give it a pass at that point.
Yeah.
Even though it's the worst part of the movie and the stunts don't look right. And they're actually saying, oh, Industrial Light and Magic did this bit. And it's so great that we can make it look realistic. It's like, yeah, nowadays it's like a little. But the rest of it, everything up until that point has actually been real. Even if it hasn't been real, it's in studios and all that kind of stuff.
But it has been done. Not so much in the computer.
Yes, it was all people doing that. And at the end, it just isn't that at all. Sorry, what are you going to say?
How much do you think this is a dated movie? I mean, it is visible. It has floppy disks in it.
Floppy disk drives moving around.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. How much do you think it is a movie that
It's 20 years old.
20 years old.
20 years. I think this is still a movie. Even just forget about the silly special effects at the end, the silly action at the end. It's really worth watching because, like, why wouldn't you watch it? I mean, it's Tom Cruise. He's a really good action star. He's doing some really good stuff. He's looking really young, looking all handsome and stuff like that. You've got some, you know, the interesting thing, John Voight is a really good actor right there at the start. You know, you've got some really good people doing some really good work here. Brian De Palma, turns out, really good movie maker. And even if you're just going to watch it for the camera angles, and normally when you say, oh, like the shots, normally when you have like quirky angles, oh, I'm going to do this shot, but I'm going to tip it to the side, I'm going to twist it this way, I'm going to look up here and stuff.
Yeah.
So often that is just...
just done.
It's just done for no reason. It's just for quirkiness. Every single framing of this is done in a way which is like, ah, right, he needs to get this information into the movie. You know, there's at one time where it's like, oh, look, split focus, where one half of it was in one focus, the other half was in another
focus. And in the middle was some blurry stuff.
Well, it was kind of blurry. The foreground was blurry in one and the background was blurry in the other. And in between, it was all blurry, you know.
Yeah.
So there are some really interesting, it's just interesting camera work. So just from a movie making point of view, you can actually go, oh, this is a masterclass in when quirky angles are not quirky. They're actually there for storytelling reasons.
True.
To fit more into the frame, to fit more important, interesting stuff into the frame. Up until they get onto the train at the end, and then they're like, oh no, actually we've got to do an action movie now, and there's special effects, and it's like the B unit is shooting, so it's not actually him setting up those shots and making those angles.
Yes.
So a lot of it is like flat on and face on, and you know, so
I'm really looking forward to see how that changes.
With a new director, changes, John Woo.
Exactly.
Is it John Woo? Does the next one? Actually, I have the IMDb page up here.
It's right there.
Oh yeah, yeah, I can just click on it here. Mission Impossible. Oh, I just tried to rate it.
Yay.
Okay, let's go back. Try that again.
Actually to click on the title.
Yes, I wanted to click on Mission Impossible 2. Mission Impossible 3. You see, I messed up.
2 and 3 does look quite similar.
No. So let's have a look at Mission Impossible 2. Yes, it was directed by...
2000.
In 2000. So it's like 4 years after the first and the second one come out. So we're getting to territory now where I have only ever seen Mission Impossible 2 one time.
Woohoo!
There is another the stunt that was in all the trailers was again Tom Cruise getting blown up into something. But yeah, let's have a look here. Director John Woo, same writers. And similar stars as well. I think some of the characters came back. You see, Ving Rhames comes back. Luther.
Yes.
He's in all five movies, I think. So it'd be good to have him back there. So, yeah, I'm looking forward to seeing this. See if I still think it's not as good as the first one or any of the other movies. I think this is the weakest one, mainly because the interminable motorbiking and fighting sequence
is
at the end.
Is that the one where they're in the
Vatican?
We're
just about to see... No, that's the third one.
Oh, right.
So we're just about to see this one. So, I said 5 minutes on that one. But we said that the whole thing. Let's get into this now. Yes. I'm going to press pause in 1 second later. We're going to watch the movie and we're going to come back and talk about it for another 5 minutes. Okay,
let's do it.
And we're back, and Juliana has a confession to make. Say it.
I confess that I am disappointed by myself. I thought that actually that movie would just be just another fun action movie stuff. Like, it held in my memory, it held up
when you watched it in the cinema when you were 15 years old.
Yes. And now watching it now, it's just like, oh my God. In that age, I didn't care about equality. Let's get to
some of the political issues with this in a second. But first of all, I remember the ending of that movie being really bad. Like the last 40 minutes, you know, that last bit. Okay, we're going to get into this thing. That point where you're going to get into this thing and then there's a whole motorbike chase at the end. And people punching each other in slow motion. I remember that being really long and boring and not enjoying it at all. Yeah. But the rest of the movie, I thought, this is just generally a Mission Impossible movie. And I didn't think it was as good as the rest, but I thought it was like coherent and held together. It is just tedious.
Pathetic.
And badly made in a way which, like we just mentioned a few minutes ago, we really liked how the first movie had a slow pace. It was like a slow pace. But it wasn't that it was a slow pace. It was that it wasn't just going from one thing to the next thing to the next. It was like something happens. Okay, now let's deal with the consequences of that. Now, next thing happens and that leads on to this. Now let's deal with the consequence of that. You know what I mean?
It's sort of like, there was a leading story thing going on.
Whereas this one, it was just slow paced. Like literally, John Woo, in his direction, puts in so much slow motion.
I think he could probably take off 20 minutes just because of slow motion.
Well, the top trivia on IMDb, it was on my phone when I just looked at it before. It said trivia. The movie was... Oh, I didn't see this one as well. On my phone, I guess the trivia comes up randomly. It says this was meant to be, it was going to be a 3 hour, 20 minute movie, and the studio was like, no, 2 hours. How can someone cut down a movie so much, but leave in, like, cut out obviously big parts of the story and cut out character moments and cut out probably whole characters and stuff? But how could they do all of that, but then leave in all of that slow motion? There's so much slow motion in this movie that if you put all that slow motion into real time, the movie would be that 20 minutes shorter. Yeah. Well, maybe not. But it felt like that.
But it felt very much like it.
Over and over. Just so much in all of the action scenes. Most of the action scenes happened in slow motion. And it was just... It was tedious. And also, what we said we liked in the first one, except for that last action sequence on the train at the end of the movie, what we really liked is that it was like, yes, we actually feel like somebody is here doing this stuff.
Yes.
And all the way through this movie, it never felt like the characters were actually there doing anything. He does this jump and he does the whole wire flying thing and it happens in slow motion, but you're just like, well, they've just hung him from a wire and put some wind in his face and it looks like he's falling quickly.
The time then when it actually comes real again is then when he's on the bottom.
Yeah, at the bottom.
Then suddenly you realize, oh yeah, this is now again an actual action shoot.
Yeah.
Like him doing it.
But then all of the action that it's just like slow. Oh, it's just tedious. Okay, another thing that really got to me. Let's just, before we get onto the political correctness or lack of it in this movie, is that in the previous movie you think, okay, Ethan Hunt. Did we see? We can't remember if we said Ethan Hawke in the first part of this. Anyway, Ethan Hunt. He's like, he's the point guy because he's just really professional. He knows what he's doing. He's young, but he's really good at what he does, and he's really good at doing the infiltration spy craft. Like in the first movie, he isn't an action hero.
No.
He only does the action if something has gone wrong. He only pulls out a gun if something's... Does he even shoot a gun in the first movie? I can't remember. Like, He runs around in Prague, doesn't do any gunning, shooting people. He does the thing in Langley, and he's fine. And then at the end, it should have all gone out, should have gone down without any gun. And here, he starts off, and he's like, and now here he is dangling from a cliff, and he's a Superman, and now he's a perfect driver, and he gets the woman straight away, and he runs around, he's perfect at motorbiking, he's really good at shooting, and he's really good at flying, and all this. And you're just like, when did he suddenly become the perfect Superman?
I don't know. I remember in the first one when they got in the building when they are the firemen and he's going in and then like taking out the guard. Yeah. And he tells him not to kill him.
Well, that's because he is in the CIA building, or in Langley anyway. He's at the intelligence headquarters, so he doesn't want to kill any Americans. But Australians, just kill the Australians. What do they do? Oh, probably just body, you know, they're just... anyway, it was just the whole end of that. So anyway, let's get on to... And as I said, this was a way worse... I remember this being the worst of all of the five movies, especially the last section. It is so far below all of the other movies... I mean, I'm going from the first one that I've seen a number of times. I've seen the first one like four or five times now. This is the second time I've seen that second movie. And it was worse than I remembered in such a long way. Everything is slow motion. And then there's this whole thing with pigeons and doves flying around. It's just so overblown. And it's all imagery. And this is
so pathetic.
And they go from, they start off in Sydney and then they go to Spain and then they go back to Sydney. And I was like, where's the third location in these movies? You need those three locations, you know, like, and in the first movie, there's London, there's
Prague.
There's Prague, there's London in the middle, Langley in America and things like that. So you need that. No, it was just like, okay, let's do a bit in Spain.
Those were the places that they got.
Maybe, I don't know, but all that stuff in Australia. But the weird thing is because they're flying around in helicopters over these buildings in Sydney. All of The Matrix was filmed in Sydney. So all of the times that they're flying around over buildings in The Matrix, it looks exactly the same because it is the same. And him going, they do the lobby entrance, walking with the guns. Yes. It's like, didn't we just do this last year? I think The Matrix came out in 1999 and this movie came out in 2000. Anyway, so just on every single levy, from an action movie point of view, a script point of view, editing.
The camera work.
This is what I was going to say. You remember in the first movie, Brian De Palma, I don't know who his cameraman was or who is, I didn't look up who the cinematographer was, but I said every shot is at this weird angle to tell you everything that you need to know about the character. You get everything in the foreground, you get everything in the background, and everything is just there.
In one shot.
Yes. And all the information is put across so beautifully and so amazingly, shot by shot. Every shot is doing like five or six jobs. And in this, it was like, at one point he runs up to someone and does a kick, and it's done in slow motion and around about 12 different camera shots, cuts, you know, edits to get from one thing, like from the start of the run to kick someone to the end of him running and kicking somebody. And I'm like, how could that take, like, how does a movie maker film that from 12 different directions, first of all, or, you know, and do them all in slow motion and cut them together?
Well, I understand it if it would be a really, really important kick.
It was just some guy. It was just a henchman.
And it was, and it also, it kept repeating. Yeah. Like, you had one kick, one jump kick, another jump kick, and then one...
Another running in slow motion.
Yeah.
And then at the end of the movie, this is what I said. I remember the interminable, just two people standing in a sand pit, running and jumping and kicking each other, and it happened like he had we've got these four really cool running and at somebody and jumping and kicking
every
at
one
them.
Of them could have been the last one.
It could, like, why did we see three in a row? And they're doing it not on rocks, they're doing it on sand, so when he does the jump kick, like, it's like in a wrestling ring where they it's all really padded, you know, it looks bad, but actually the whole stage just bounces.
But
up
also
and down.
Like, just the credibility
of
somebody kicking, and I don't know.
How did that fight last so long?
Yeah, and how can his face only had a little bit of blood coming out of his mouth at that point? Yeah. The face should have been shattered.
Forget all that. I'm just saying that I timed it, and it was from the beginning of that fight. It was in the beginning when they jump off the motorbikes to the end of the fight. It was like 6 minutes or something?
Yes.
With no story at that point. All it is people punching each other and kicking each other in slow motion. Anyway, let's move on to
Let me rant a bit.
Let's do the Bechdel test.
The Bechdel test would probably be a minus, minus, minus something. I don't even know if that exists. But
the Bechdel test is the lowest bar of a movie. This fell so far below that.
Especially like this test is mostly about other women in the movie, other talking women to each other, not about the main character. Yeah. So in this one is even I can't remember when I've last seen a movie that pathetically sexist and. I don't know. I was thinking that the writer or the person who wrote this must have had really bad women issues, because it was all about women are dumb and always just have to show their boobs and are just objects to men. Because we only have one woman in this whole movie.
Which is such a contrast from the first movie,
exactly.
Where they start up and it's like, okay, we've got six people on this team. Three of them are women, three of them are men. Yeah. And they're like, okay, that's fine. Yeah. And some of them survive, some of them don't survive. And then other main characters that turn up happen to be women. And you're like, oh, okay. So women are part of this world just as much as...
Totally. And they are also capable. And there... She's not capable of anything.
Literally, they say, okay, you're going to work with this woman. And he recruits her by having sex with her.
Yay.
And getting into bed. And then it's all like this. And then the twist is, oh, actually, she's a master thief, but we don't want to use her for her thieving abilities. We're going to send her in and she's going to get together with her old boyfriend and try and get information or get contacts.
Great.
Or something like that. And it was like, oh, yeah, she's a liar. And Tom Cruise is like, she's not trained for this. And Anthony Hopkins is like, well, all she has to do is lie and use her body and sleep with the guy. She's a woman. She's perfect for this job. And you're just no.
Yeah, and the whole movie, like sentences like that coming out all the time. I mean, this whole movie is such a male-dominated alpha thing.
Yeah.
I mean, you have cars.
It's so macho all the way through.
The one woman you have is like she's treated like bait.
There was a line in it saying, "Women are like monkeys. They always want to have their hand on one branch before they let go of the last branch." And I'm just like, "Oh, this is awful." And again, at one point, Tom Cruise is like, "Oh no, I disagree with this. I don't think you should treat women this way." And then he has been up until that point. And then from then on, he's like, oh, yes, and I will just continue to treat women this way.
Yeah. Right. Not women.
This one woman, every shot of her is of her boobs. Every costume is of her boobs. Her boobs become like major plot points in the movie. It's like, no, we have to show her boobs because she's going to do with this with them. Oh, no, she's going to have to wear this really skimpy top for no reason because we've got to do this with it. Anyway, all the way through. It's
pathetic.
Awful. And you're annoyed with yourself that you didn't notice this when you were 15 years old.
And this is terrible. I mean,
in my
memory, this was just another Mission Impossible movie. I was impressed by the thing with the virus. And the mythology that was behind
it.
And of course I was totally convinced and stuff with this mask on, mask off thing. I thought, oh, this is
well,
so
actually,
cool.
There are a few cool things with the masks. I do actually enjoy the masks in these
especially
things.
If you watch it for the first time. I think there's some really
even the third time.
If you're 15 and watch it for the first time, there's some cool
I'm just
stuff.
Saying, even in this one, the stuff that I enjoyed most was when a character is acting weirdly and you're like, are they in a mask? And you're like, yeah, they're in a mask. And it can work, but there is some stupid stuff going in there, which is...
Totally.
The non-mask stuff is stupid. Anyway, I think that's it. We talked for 10 minutes about this one. Let's wrap this up and we will see you in your time, in about 10 seconds time. In our time, we're gonna go to bed and we're going to watch another movie in the morning.
Right.
And it's going to be much better than this one.
Oh, I'm glad.
And we're back. It's the next day and it's the December 24th and we decided to get up and we ate breakfast. But while we were eating breakfast, we put on Mission Impossible number 3.
That's right.
And this one directed by J.J. Abrams. Now, you can tell it was directed by J.J. Abrams because immediately at the start, it's not shit. And he's actually a good director. Not amazing, but, you know, it's one of those things where you just go, oh, right, now we're in safe hands again. And I totally understand. After J.J. Abrams, he was doing Lost, and then they were like, okay, do this Mission Impossible movie. And he did a decent Mission Impossible movie, like really good. And you understand, because he did this franchise thing, you can totally understand. He did this. He made after a series of bad movies, or no, after one bad movie, he kind of made Mission Impossible into like a franchise again, which people were going to care about after the second one. And you totally understand why when it goes, oh, we need someone to do Star Trek, you're like, oh yeah, J.J. Abrams, he's good at that. And then Star Wars, oh yeah, J.J. Abrams, he can do this. Like, he obviously puts his own spin on it, but he's good enough to just take existing characters, existing sets, and existing whatevers, and just make a good movie out of it. And you understand why he was trusted with Star Wars and Star Trek. Anyway, carry on.
I also think that he had quite an easy job here.
Really?
I mean, after the second one, it was not hard to actually get back into a really good action movie with the right kind of emotional attachment, fun. It starts with fun at the beginning.
Yeah, what?
Right? I mean, it starts with the engagement part.
No, it doesn't. It starts with a really intense scene where somebody has got a gun to the head and somebody else has got an explosive device in their brain, and he's saying, I'm going to kill your wife unless you tell me where the rabbit's foot is.
Exactly.
That is not fun. That is a really, really intense in media res opening, like cold opening onto intense action. And that's just in your brain. So then when you go, oh, and now we're having an engagement party.
Yeah.
Like, and you see the person, you see the two people who have been sitting there with guns to their heads and things like that. Every time that you see them together, you're like, well, we know in the future there's going to be this really intense scene later on because we've already seen it earlier on in the movie.
Yeah, so, it's playing a lot with contrast.
Yeah.
Not only with this kind of contrast, but also as we noticed, the slow motion use in this one is always leading up to a very intense action, quick stuff happening quickly.
Well, it's not just that. It's sort of like, we are showing you something in slow motion because it is what? It is important. We are going to see the... this is what the first movie did as well, the Brian De Palma movie did as well. But it's just such a different thing where John Woo is like, let's just have everything in slow motion so everything is boring because everything is at the same level of importantness.
Yes.
Whereas in here, the stunts are done in normal speed. And there's like, actually, there's one or two which are done in slow motion, but generally, it's just good. Now, also what we have here with J.J. Abrams is weird, is stuff in the foreground, and you could totally tell. We're talking about Brian De Palma with his camera angles and then John Woo with his very flat, like slow motiony angles, and here we have always have stuff out of focus in the foreground. That is J.J. Abrams.
And this is exactly what I just very much noticed, just especially after watching Star Wars, where we watched the 3D in Star Wars, and in 3D this can get really distracting and really terrible because you have the smudge and weed in the foreground, and in 3D it's just so difficult. And in 2D, well, I notice it, but it's all right.
It's nice. If this had been made if this had been a 3D movie, it would have been a bit too
and lens flare.
Yeah, and there was lens flare in this, not as much as in Star Trek, but it is interesting to see these different movies. It's the same characters doing the same stunts. Once again, he has to get into something from the top of the building.
Yes.
And they do this, all this, oh, we're going to swing from this building to this building. He does that. What's actually good, though, is that while obviously some of it was a bit too CGI, at least the CGI is better in this one than it was in the previous two movies. Like, CGI is catching up that you can just go, well, we can see this is fake.
Yeah, but
it's not in your face.
It's not badly video shopped in the foreground.
Well,
as
the CGI. Also, it's interesting to see they have this whole battle on a bridge. And I know because I saw 10 years ago when this movie came out, I saw like a making of thing and they actually showed how they did that. And they built that whole bridge on a runway or just in like some open air somewhere.
But it was a real bridge.
It wasn't a real bridge, but it was a real road with real fake bits of bridges around them and real cars driving along a real thing. And it's all real except the background isn't real.
Yeah.
Like, so this is the most important thing with CGI stuff mixing CGI with real reality stuff is that the thing that you're looking at has to be real. And the stuff in the background can be as fake as you want it, which is different from when I watched Jurassic Park and they're like, okay, well, this is a real forest. They're filming in a real forest and then they're putting in fake dinosaurs in a real forest. Or these are real people and then there's a fake dinosaur running around in front of the real people. And that's just the wrong way round to do it.
Yes.
You know, you have to have the real thing, and it doesn't matter if in the background, like Mad Max Fury Road, it's all CGI.
Yeah.
But you're actually looking at real trucks. They're not moving. Apparently they filmed a lot of the stuff without the trucks moving, but then they said, oh, we'll just make the wheels move. We'll make the background move. But actually where the trucks are and the people on the
are real.
And they're actually real things. Like it's all of those vehicles are real. Not all the time that you see them are real. Anyway, that's what this movie felt like, you know.
Totally. Yeah.
Except that there's a bit of a bit where he's like flying around on a parachute, and to be honest, that could have been like if I was going to edit that. But you can also see that they edited that as though it was going to be like you know, like it could have jumped. He could have jumped out, and then he could have landed where he landed. He didn't have to have that whole blowing around thing. But it was fun.
But
it's
it
fun
was to watch. Interesting. What I really like in this movie, especially compared to the previous one, is that. It doesn't come quite down to the normal level as in the first one with the treating or like or having female and male character in like in numbers and in what they do. But in this one, there are at least three very important female characters who are not dumb.
No,
who are very just very intelligent.
Well, there's like four. Three.
And they can actually do stuff.
Yes,
and
they do.
And
do
they
stuff.
Don't. They're not whiny and like, oh my god, oh what's happening? Oh
yes. In that second movie, there was one female character, and she had to do all of the roles of all of the female characters.
Exactly.
So and when you needed someone to be sexy, she had to be sexy. When you needed someone to have sex with, it was her. Like anyone in the mission, it was her. Like she had
everything
was
focused on her. And also, this became
on
just
her boobs.
The object.
Yeah.
And in this movie, they had female characters who acted on their own behalf.
Yeah.
And who weren't like just dependent on what the man does.
Yeah.
They took over the action.
Yeah.
And this is the really big difference in this one. It didn't feel like...
But it's only because we just saw it. Like, if I'd have just watched this movie, I wouldn't have noticed. Like,
exactly.
At the end, this would have been like this and women were like this. It would have just been a movie, but it's only after watching the awfulness of the first movie that we're like, oh, that
the
was so...
One.
Oh, sorry, the second movie, where it was... The females were literally talked about as they were monkeys and dogs and liars and cheats, and that was the only representation of women in the men's world. It was pretty bad.
Yes.
Anyway, also what I liked about this is there's some good stunts as well, which is good fun.
Yes.
And also the characters, they're kind of putting together that this is where the adding the characters really starts to the group. Because in the first movie, Ving Rhames came along as what's his name? I don't know, something. Anyway, I can't believe it. Actually, I can just look it up here. I've probably still got the Mission Impossible 3 thing open. Yes, here it is, Mission Impossible 3. So Ving Rhames, Luther Stickle. Although I think in the other movie he was Strickle. Anyway, Luther Stickle, he comes in and he is... he's a character of there. Oh, any time that Tom Cruise, Ethan Hunt needs to needs some help, he can call on him. And now we have another computer guy, which is Simon Pegg, and he's now in the next three movies. And over these next few movies, they add new cast members who return each time.
Yeah.
The ones that don't die, they add these new cast members. But like, because I've just seen the fifth movie. Simon Pegg, he's just like one of the team. He's out there in the field. He's going around. He's, you know,
cool.
he's shooting. He's driving. He's doing all that kind of stuff.
He was quite helpful in this one.
But in this movie, he is very much like a guy who sits at his desk.
Yeah, and he's an office guy.
I thought he was like in the latest movies, he's like the main guy. But now he's a J.J. Abrams kind of guy.
Of course.
He was in Star Wars. Do you know he's in Star Wars?
Yeah, I know.
And he was also in, of course, a big part in Star Trek as well.
Yes.
And it's funny to see some other actors that we know. For example, Jesse from
Breaking Bad.
From Breaking Bad is Tom Cruise's brother-in-law, and you're like, oh, that's fun.
Yeah,
seeing
it
him
is
there.
Fun.
But that was in '95, so that's probably before Breaking Bad started. I'm guessing
this is
you know,
in 2006.
This was 2006, was it?
Yes.
Yeah. He even says in the movie, it's like, oh yes, I've not been out in the field for the last 5 years, and it's like, oh right, since the last movie. Okay.
Yes. That and, totally fits together. And he has short hair again.
Yeah.
Oh, thank goodness.
Thank goodness. I think John Woo only had him have long hair because then it flops around in slow motion
it's so
beautifully.
It's nice. And you can have the wind blow against it. Oh,
it's so bad. So bad 90s hair.
And
the other one is, and right at the start, they're talking, he's saying, because he apparently his cover story, Tom Cruise's cover story is that he works for the Department of Transport. And he starts talking about traffic. And one guy is like, oh, so boring. And the women are like, I would totally marry him, which is quite a funny... And that's a much better way of showing how what kind of a person he is.
Of course.
Much better than him rock climbing with no ropes and you know, driving and all that kind of stuff. You know, now it's established that he is the Superman and he has superpowers.
Yeah, and he can read lips and then and surprise the women and stuff.
But it's in a way, like he's doing it in to character to make him into an interesting character who's like, oh, he wants to settle down, he wants to do this, he wants to do that. Oh yeah, and the guy who rolls his eyes at the is I recognize him. He's one of the actors in Lost as well.
I haven't seen that.
And I've seen him in other things as well. He's another J.J. Abrams actor. I can't remember his name, Matt something. Anyway, he's probably right here in the.
But that's cool.
It's not high enough up there. Anyway, and Lawrence Fishburne and Eddie Marsan and of course Philip Seymour Hoffman in here.
Oh, really good. Yeah. There's this one scene that I just like so much. You know, the scene in the bathroom is just great.
Yeah.
It's just cool.
Yeah.
How he's standing behind himself, looking himself in the mirror, and he has this tiny different view in his eyes so you can identify who's the real one and who isn't.
Yeah, it turns out actors are actually good at acting.
Yeah.
Good actors are good at acting. And it's so nice compared to the second movie. Like, I care about this bad guy, even though he does the same job. He's just an arms dealer. That's all he's doing. That's what the Impossible Mission Force does. They stop arms dealers and go in and do... And he is just like, well, that's... Like, if we can have someone like that, we don't need to see them chopping people's fingers off to know that they're evil. Just have him look evil, act evil, not do evil things, but just act evil.
Yeah.
Like, you can do that just from acting. You don't need to show them doing things. He does do things. But what you need to do is just stick him in a room and say, hey, Philip Seymour Hoffman, here's your script. Now, opposite Tom Cruise, who is obviously the good guy, you're the bad guy. Go for it, guys.
Yeah.
And just between the two of them, they have a few scenes together where you're just like, oh, right, these guys, good guy, bad guy. Good actor, both really good actors. One plays the star, one plays the villain. Yeah. Just go for it. And all the way through this, it's really great to see the bad guys actually doing that. All of them have English accents.
Exactly. I was just wanted to say, why the hell is every villain always having to be a Scottish or an English person in American movies?
Yeah.
I mean, how can they not just have another Texan guy?
Well, no, actually in the previous movie, the second bad guy was South African.
Oh, all right. Well,
so he had a, although I can never really, sometimes I get confused between South African accents and New Zealand accents. Sometimes they mix a bit, but it's, you know, Southern, but English, like a non-American English accent.
All right.
Someone speaking English, but with a not American accent. Anyway,
right.
I think we've gone long enough about this one. Last point about this.
We've been in Berlin in this movie.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, the first movie was Prague and, of course, Virginia.
Yeah, and London.
Yeah, and London. The second movie was Seville in Spain and then just loads in Sydney. And it's really nice to actually go between different places. So here, starting off in Berlin, a lot of stuff in Virginia. Oh, and the Vatican City and finishing off. So we had like four main locations in this one, which I think is enough. You know, it's good that it all finished there.
It's good. But what I noticed about this currently, because we watch all of them just after the other, is there always a traitor in the other movies as well?
Yes.
Really, that's
Well, no, actually, in the second movie, there isn't a traitor. You know, there isn't somebody working on the inside. The second movie is actually the most straight mission. It's like, we go here...
No, but this is the whole thing about the second one. They are looking for the mole.
Which mole?
Oh, no, that was the first one.
That was the first one. Yeah, the mole was in the first one. The second one is literally, we've got this woman here... And she was a traitor, but she was a traitor for the other side.
Yeah, I mean, kind of.
Second one is the story is so like boringly basic that you don't have there is never, we are disowning you, you know, because that's always the thing. If anything goes wrong, we will disown you and we will deny all knowledge that you exist or anything exists, like that kind of stuff. And that always happens in all the other movies. That happens in the second movie. It doesn't. It's just like, you've got to go in and get this thing.
Yeah.
And then he goes in. And he gets that thing, and then he does it. Whereas in this one, it's like, I've got to go and think, oh, this person's going to help you, this person's going to not help you, this person's going to double cross you. Which one is the mole? Which one? Is it someone in your team? Is it someone in the other people's team? Anyway, so...
this is part of the...
Anything else to say about this, or should we press pause and watch the next movie?
Yeah, let's do it.
Well, I think we're going to go out for a walk, because it's actually really sunny here.
It's nice. It's nice weather, but way too warm. What is, like, 12 degrees?
Yeah.
On 24th of December.
Anyway, let's get on with this. And we're back after the next movie, Ghost Protocol, this one directed by, what was his name? Brad Bird. Brad Bird, who also directed The Impossibles and other Pixar movies. So,
all right.
So,
did you see an impact?
What do you mean, did I see an impact?
Did you see parallels.
Well, it's not so much parallels, but if you've seen Ratatouille and The Incredibles,
obviously
is
Ratatouille.
Yeah, if you've seen The Incredibles, it is very much a and Up as well. The Incredibles is his masterpiece. I don't think this gets to the same levels of that, but he obviously knows what he's doing when it comes to...
So you mean he's good in action?
He's good at action. He knows how to put together an interesting movie with lots of fun stuff and fun adventures. Now, I've also seen the movie that came out this year called the Disney one, the Tomorrowland.
I don't know. I haven't seen that.
You haven't seen it yet?
No.
But that's also, let's have all these big, let's have these adventures with these inventions. It's lots of machines and widgety things. And
okay.
Well, and
a few of that is in this movie
as well.
Yes,
there is a few bits and pieces of that. And he is actually he's quite good with that. But what do you think of this movie?
I enjoyed it. I enjoyed it very much. I had big laughter. I had tears in my eyes. And I was in the last scene.
Oh, yes, it is very good.
It's so touching. And I think it was a really, really good movie. There's no thing that totally sprang into my face like, oh, this is bad. This is weird.
You were complaining about the Russian music.
I mean, the Russian music is always, in American movies, it's always like...
There's only one... Every time the Russian military turns up, it is like the Russian military choir turns up to accompany the Russian military.
As if that would be real.
Well, no. Did you see... I watched The Hunt for the Red October. That's got all of that all the way through as well.
Yeah, that is kind of like the movie for this.
Yeah, okay. Right? So this is a new Mission Impossible movie. I said, he gets the whole team back together. Or, you start adding more members to the team. And I said, Ving Rhames is back and Simon Pegg is back.
Yeah, there's actually... In the first beginning, only Simon Pegg back. Yeah, there's nobody else.
Yeah, well, Simon Pegg is back, and they do bring Ving Rhames back. But I remembered him being in the movie. But he's only in the last minute. And when he was like, I've got a friend that I've got to go and talk to, I was like, is this Ving Rhames? Does he turn up again? But no, it isn't. So yes, this is the one. He only turns up at the end.
Yeah.
And Tom Cruise's wife, is it Julie?
Julia.
She only turns up again. Mild spoilers. She turns up again in this movie as well. But it's interesting. This is the first one. Well, not the first one. Like in the first movie, there was that kind of like, woman being a bit sexy towards him. But it was like, actually the woman was being treacherous. And in the second one, it was like, there's only one woman. But that was like the most Bond-like, where he's like, a woman turns up. And of course, I'm going to have sex with her and sleep with her. And then the next one, he kind of grew up a bit and had a wife. And it's interesting to see him kind of go through as he's growing up, have different relationships with the women as it comes through.
Yes.
You know,
yeah, in this one he feels very much like an I don't know, I wouldn't even say asexual, but he feels like a person that is kind of experienced a lot, and so he doesn't really care about this kind of stuff.
Well, you realize that he
has a bit more distance to love and stuff.
Yeah, well, you understand that the whole movie is in reaction to what happened in the last one. Is like,
of course.
I'm going to be an agent, or if I'm going to be involved in anything at all, me being married isn't a good thing. And that's actually one of the themes that goes through this as well. And other people that turn up is Agent Carter, I think her name was. She was a new cast member.
Pretty good.
Pretty
capable. She was really going for it.
Really going for it. And I like the fact that she was she had a mission, and then someone's bringing in to replace her. And it's sort of like you could see that she was like, when Tom Cruise says, hey, what are you doing here? And she has like, you can tell that she's been Tom in another movie. She would be the lead character in the movie.
Yes, totally.
And she has her own reasons for doing things and things and stuff, which is pretty good. And what was her name? Lea Seydoux, is that her name? Who is the Bond girl in the latest movie?
You mean the assassin?
Yeah, the assassin in this movie, Lea Seydoux. She's the Bond girl in the latest movie, and
she collects diamonds.
In this movie, she collects diamonds. in James Bond, she is, I don't know, just pathetic. That whole, I know it's weird to say this, but there's just so many things wrong with that movie. And I actually said when I saw that movie, and then like the next week I saw the fifth Mission Impossible movie, which we're going to watch next.
Yay.
I was just like, this Mission Impossible movie was everything. It was like the opposite of everything I didn't like about the latest Bond movie.
Well,
but I didn't realize that Léa Seydoux. I forgot that Léa Seydoux was in here. You know, I didn't remember the casting.
So this is the first time I've seen this movie.
Yes.
And your second time you've seen this one.
Yes, I've seen this. Well, it's one of those weird things that I've seen it once all the way through, and then it often plays like you know, when I'm on flights, I see other people watching it, and I'll end up watching the some of the action sequences in silence. You know, just sort of remembering what was going along and seeing that kind of stuff. And sometimes on cruise ships, when it's, you know, it's playing like in the gym, and people are watching it on the, it's playing on the TV screens in the gym, and people leave the videos going. Yeah.
So in this one, in the first, we were counting up cities where things were taking place, and we were saying like Prague and stuff and stuff. So this year, I think of all of them, had the most cities.
Yes.
Taking things.
Budapest?
Like, we were Budapest.
It was mostly Eastern Europe. Well, not easy. It started off Eastern Europe. So it was Budapest Moscow. And then Dubai, and then moving
and
on
then
to
Mumbai
as
and
well.
And then Seattle at the end.
So it was really good. This is what we were saying before about, like, in each one of these movies, there's always, like, the ropey CGI effects. In the first one, it was on the train.
Right.
In the second one, it was the jumping down from the helicopter through the building.
Yeah.
In this one, it was at the beginning and at the very... Well, mostly at the very beginning, where there's an explosion and a building blows up and he runs away from it. And it's like, that is really unconvincing. Mm. Very unconvincing. And then at the end, with some rockets flying around, you're like, that's also not very convincing. But most of the way through, all the stunts, that they actually felt real, you know.
Yes.
Even the stuff which is obviously not real,
especially the stuff in Dubai.
Yeah.
I was very much frightened when the sandstorm was CGI.
I just want to say the sandstorm is bad CGI when it comes towards them, but when they're in it, it actually feels real, because it's just like, well, we're inside of it now.
Yeah.
The sandstorm from the outside looked like bad CGI,
especially the sound effects that it makes.
Yeah.
I'm not sure, I've never been in the sandstorm, but I don't think it makes like ghosts. Like maybe it does.
And so what I did like about this was this year I actually went to the Burj Khalifa, which is the tallest building in the world, and here they were and Tom Cruise was jumping around and dangling outside of and jumping off of the buildings and stuff like that. It was crazy. And when I was there, they actually had these features when you're like queuing up to get on the elevators downstairs. They play these special features, like, and here is something that happened at the top, and here's a thing about like a base jumper jumping off the top and flying down.
I already feel ill thinking.
And here's
about
somebody. Now we're talking about how they clean the windows. And here's another thing about fireworks display that they shoot off on the side. And one of the features that they had was, here's Tom Cruise doing stunts, and they actually just showed it was him. It really was him.
He was dangling outside. He
was on the cables. When you see him,
building.
When you see him climbing up the sides, that's actually him climbing. I mean,
so
he's on cables in the movie. He's not on.
Even on cables.
Yeah,
I wouldn't do that. So many things can go wrong there. There's strong winds there, and he's just there on two cables. I already feel ill just thinking about it. It's crazy.
I don't think it's a bad thing.
I think it's pretty stupid.
What he was doing, I would do. If someone says, hey, we're going to set up some cables here and you're going to swing around
if
here.
If you get millions of dollars for it,
No, I would just do it. If someone said, you could do this for free, this is going to be like, if someone said you could either do skydiving or we're going to put you on a cable and you're going to swing around outside the tallest building in the world, I would always go for swinging around on the tallest building in the world over a skydive. But I'd probably do a skydive anyway, because generally they're kind of safe.
Does he say I never have actually done it?
I have never done it. But I have done that thing, you know, where you go on those cable drops where you're on the side of the building and there's like a cable and you go...
On the Alexanderplatz.
Yeah, there's one at Alexanderplatz. I was in New Zealand and did one of those there. Yeah. Although I said I would definitely do that. But at the point when I actually had to step off, he says, okay, 1, 2, 3, go. And I was like, I'm going. And my body just didn't do it. It just didn't do it. And I was like, oh, I'm normally really good at this. Like if I'm jumping into water, I'll just jump, you know, like off a cliff or something. I'll just jump. But this was one of the things that, like, I was like, my brain was going, yes. And my brain was going, I'm not scared. And, like, everything in my head was going...
biology said, what are you doing?
Yeah.
What the hell?
Yeah, my biology was just like, no, you're not doing this. And my body just went, no, we're not doing this. And then the guy goes, are you going to do it? And I was like, I just didn't hear you count properly. or whatever I said. And then he says, okay, go. And then when I was ready, like, I had to take my body back over again. So I think... if I was doing a movie shoot and I was a stuntman and they're like, okay, we've got one shot at this, you've got to jump off here in the cable, I would actually say to them, like I said, look, either I've got to do this a few times or you're just going to have to, I'm going to do the count.
So you behaved a bit like the guy who then jumped into the vent. What's his name? The analyst?
Oh, yeah, Jeremy Renner.
That was exactly what he was doing.
Yeah, he was like, okay.
Simon Pegg said it to three and then he said... You sure that I should yeah. just
is
jump?
Is this going to be this?
Is this going to be working?
Will you catch? I'll catch you. I quite like those things. And it's actually quite good fun to see at that point. Well, you realize why they put Jeremy Renner in there. It's because, you know, if Tom Cruise doesn't want to do it anymore, they've got another guy who is like being set up to be the guy.
Totally.
Of course, Tom Cruise keeps coming back and Jeremy Renner's in the next movie. He is just part of the team in the same way that Simon Pegg and Ving Rhames, what's his name? Benji and...
Luther.
I keep forgetting the names anyway. Yeah. So those guys are going to be
there.
But
what I think is definitely what you can see over time. It's so funny when you do this kind of marathons, you can see Tom Cruise age so much. And in this one...
Long hair again.
Especially... Yeah, oh, yeah. Why?
No, it's okay. It's okay.
Anyway, but also his physiology...
His physique, you mean?
His physique changes. Yeah. So his shoulders get a bit like more bulky and he gets a bit more of a belly and
okay.
a bit more
We've
like
talked too long about this. We're going to have to wrap it up. We're just going to say, is this your favorite so far? You seem to be reacting to it more. Or maybe it's just because it's new. You've not seen it before.
Yeah, I don't know. I still like the first one.
The first one is good.
The first one and this one.
I still like the quietness of the first one. Like here.
Yes.
When
it is way more like an espionage kind of film.
And these are just action
and
city
these
actions.
These are just action movies.
Whereas this one, it felt like, you know, once they did something, it was like, and now there was none of them. Right, okay, now let's sit down. Okay, now let's work out what's happening next. So it's like, oh shit, that's happened. Now let's go to a different city and set up that. Oh, now let's go to a different, you know.
Yeah. Let's just have lots of action in different environments. Yeah. But I like it. I really like it. So I would say in my rating, it would be 1.
We haven't seen the last one yet.
4.
Let's just, we'll do the rankings at the end, okay?
All right, let's do it.
So we're going to open some presents now and get a bit of food and then watch the final movie.
And then be back soon.
Well, we're going to be back in 3, 2, 1, now. We are back. And that's kind of actually what happened at the end of the fourth movie leading into this fifth movie, at the end of Ghost Protocol leading into Rogue Nation.
Yes.
Was it was like, oh, now if you choose to accept it, go and sort out the syndicate. You four, let's go sort out the syndicate.
Yeah.
And three of them return to sort out the syndicate.
The syndicate, yes.
And they arrive at the beginning of it and they do this mission, which is, oh, you've got to get this stuff out the back of the plane. And it starts off with actually a pretty fun stunt with Tom.
Yeah, and I said, oh, this was a successful mission.
Yes, mostly a successful mission.
Yeah.
And and they did this and that's how it starts. Like the pre-credit sequence starts off like that. And then they're like, the last one was the light diffuse. In the credit sequence, in the old TV show, they always used to show like the highlights from that episode in the credits.
Yes.
There's a few different TV shows that did that, and that was that. Another one I remember, which was the Thunderbirds, which is the puppet one. You know, they were on Tracy Island, Thunderbirds are go, and the rocket. Anyway,
I have no idea.
That's one of those ones.
Not
where
German television.
Yeah, no, probably not. But you'd always watch it, and they'd put the highlights like the action climaxes of what's coming up just in there.
Right.
And you were like, oh, I definitely want to stick around and see this. And that's what they did in TV.
This is what they did in 4 or 5
No,
movies.
It was 3 of these ones.
Three
so Mission
them.
Impossible 1.
1.
The fourth one and the fifth,
and
one.
Fifth one.
Yeah, the second and third one they just did kind of generic-y kind of sparks going along a fuse kind of thing. So they did that. And then it actually, like I say, it picks up. I just mentioned this when we were just talking about the previous movie, is that it actually says, it kind of does a recap of, remember in the last movie when you, A, blew up the Kremlin, B, hit San Francisco with a nuclear weapon, deactivated nuclear weapon, which wasn't armed, you know, that kind of thing. So it actually starts with them going back over what just happened in the previous movie.
True.
And what happened there. So I didn't remember it that clearly because I watched Ghost Protocol a few years ago, and then I actually watched this, the fifth one, Rogue Nation, like 2 months ago, whenever it was. And I didn't remember. I was like, oh yeah, they did something in the... And it was like...
It was pretty good that they actually had this...
But I didn't remember it well enough for it to actually mean anything to me.
Yeah.
But it was now, watching these back-to-back, literally with like 20 minutes in between the two movies, or 30 minutes in between the two movies, I noticed it a lot more in this one, which was pretty good fun. What did you think of this final movie? This is the first time that you've seen this one.
It's the first time, and I think it sticks really well with the it's like a continuation of the fourth. I didn't quite see so many differences. Was it a new director again?
Yes, it was a new director. Let's go to this is the weird thing. We've always talked about like what the directors bring to the different movies. We had John Woo. Well, let's go through them. Which one was it? It was
What was the first one?
Brian De Palma.
Yeah.
And then John Woo.
And then J.J. Abrams.
J.J. Abrams. And then Brad Bird. And finally, Christopher McQuarrie. Now, I only know him. I know most of his movies that he's written. Check this out. He wrote The Usual Suspects and Valkyrie, Jack Reacher, which I don't know. Edge of Tomorrow, we watched that one. Science fiction movie.
So he's a writer for Tom Cruise.
He wrote Mission Impossible Rogue Nation. And look at this. He's writing...
MI6.
Yeah, and Mission Impossible 6.
They can't really call that.
Yeah, they can't really call it MI6. It's a bit too... anyway, so he's only directed two of the movies. Way of the Gun, which I've not seen. That was back in 2000. Jack Reacher, which is another... Jack Reacher is another Tom Cruise one I've not seen. So this is pretty much his first movie that I've seen of his, like, because he's only directed two of the movies and I've not seen them. So it's quite weird to say, what did he bring to the movie? What I like what he brought to the movie is he pretty much went, okay, let's look back over the previous ones and see what works best. And I think this is actually the most balanced of all of them.
There was nothing really that stood out.
What do you mean?
In cinematography speaking, there was no over the top lens flare. There was lens flare.
Yeah, there was a bit of that.
And there was quick cuts. Was there slow motion?
A few tiny bits of slow motion. Yeah. But what I realized, what he's bringing to it, is actually he is no longer like all of these other directors seem to have gone, right, I'm going to make a Mission Impossible movie, but I'm going to make a J.J. Abrams in Mission Impossible. Yeah. I'm going to make which is all about the characters and story about getting back together with his wife and all that kind of stuff. And, Brad Bird, well, it's going to be toys and action set pieces.
Yes.
John Woo is going to be slow motion motorbike chases and punching people. And Brian De Palma is much more like, oh, I'm going to bring it down and it's going to be tense and it's going to be spy-like.
And
this one, I'm just going to say, I don't know what he brought. I don't know what this guy does.
There was absolutely no footprint or fingerprint that he gave it.
Except he made it into, I think, probably the most balanced of all of the movies.
And he made it very much a Tom Cruise movie. You know, there was a thing on a plane. There was motorbike chases. This is what Tom Cruise loves.
Yeah, yeah. But I'm saying this is stuff.
So it was very very much centralized onto what he showed extremely what this is all about.
Mm.
And so this is totally why I say it's just a continuation of the fourth of the row. There's no standing out, but just good entertainment. I never felt like bored or something.
No, I'm saying it's not that there's nothing standing out, but I think it's not over the top action like the two of the previous ones were, and I don't think there's over the top fighting, and also it balances it well with like the tension. I think this is one of the apart from the first one, this is the most tense in any point. You know, there's a whole sequence in the opera house at the start, the Vienna Opera House,
which all I recognized already in the credits.
Yeah, you were like, hey, is that the Vienna Opera House? I was like, well, I'm not going to say anything. But that was really tense. All of that stuff where people are looking at it, what's going on here, like that. And
figuring out how many killers are actually there.
Yeah, who's the bad guys? Who's the good guys? Who can we trust? I think there was like four moments in this movie which were more tense than anything outside of the first movie. I think this is actually a better, some of the bits of this is better put together. Now, like all the rest of the movies, there is a moment. There's like two moments where the special effects go a little bit too CGI.
Yes.
There's one car crash and you're like, if we'd have just cut out that one crash, and the stuff in the water as well, a little bit too CGI. But I understand that's how they have to film it.
Yeah.
But
otherwise, you can't do it any other way.
But it was perfectly tense. It was perfectly good.
But you can do a lot with real cars and real explosions.
We said this
stuff
about the third one where they're like, everything on this bridge, everything away from the bridge is fake, but everything on the bridge is actually happening for real.
Yeah.
And when Tom Cruise, there was an explosion behind him, they actually put him on a cable and went zip and pulled him into a car and, you know, all that kind of stuff. It's actually happening for real. And in here, everything felt like it was real except for the second half of one car crash.
Where the car flipped just a little bit too much.
That's fake. And we know from the third movie that they could have just done that. Like, we had a similar kind of car flipping thing which looked fantastic and real in the third movie. Here in the fifth movie, it was awful. But I do actually think this is the most balanced of all of them.
That's true.
There are less female characters. There's only one female character.
Again, I noticed that they went back to only one important female character.
Yes, but she's
there
not
was
a
one other which we can't even remember.
She's in the credits.
Her.
And I'm like, oh, who is she in this movie?
But she's a very strong female character. She's almost equally leading character.
Yeah.
And so this is in comparison to the second one, where there was also a very strong female character as a leading character.
She wasn't a strong character.
Oh, but she's a strong.
Well, it's
independent.
The whole thing about strong female character, strong female leaders. Like, it's like I watched this movie the first time. I didn't even realize there was only one female character in there.
If we wouldn't have just talked about this,
and in
if I wouldn't have just been centralized on, oh, all right, this is a thing.
Count the female characters.
I wouldn't have thought about it until the end. Mm. At the end, I thought, there was actually also only one female, but because it was more balanced and she was treated like a human being, just like another person, and not like, oh, she's just an object.
And once again, there was that kind of frisson of, not sexual tension, but kind of like admiration between Tom Cruise and her.
Yeah, but there was with a hug.
Yeah, there was never any part. And I like this. I really like
me
this.
Too,
and
too.
I think I mentioned this to you about some other movies like Mad Max Fury Road. You're thinking, oh, these are really good, like a competent male and competent female.
Yes.
Obviously, the female is just as in control as them. You know, it's sort of like there's nothing to show between the two which one's in charge at any one point. Of course, in this one, Tom Cruise had to come out. And I really like the end sequence of this.
Yes.
The balance is good there, and there's another few as well, and it's a complete utter contrast to the latest James Bond movie that came out.
Well, I don't know about that.
Oh, it's just awful. It's just so terrible. Like it's exactly the same as this movie, except the opposite it in every way. In every way that I didn't like that movie, I enjoyed
this one.
I
will have to watch it at some point to figure out what is the difference.
It's just so bad. I don't want to review it, but it's pretty much every time they come to a situation, I don't understand what the characters want, because James Bond has just got a gun and he's just like, well, there's something here. I'll just walk into this situation with a gun.
Yeah.
No plan. And because he doesn't say what the plan is, I never know what he wants. He just walks in with a gun, shoots a few people, saves someone. And then another situation, he's just got a gun. He's like, I'm in the Vatican City. I'm just going to go in with a gun. And he shoots. And I think I mentioned this on a podcast a while ago. What I loved about these movies is that at every point, you know exactly what the people want, because they plan it all out in advance.
Yes.
Right, we're going to do this. We're going to do that. We're going to need this.
If you don't know the plan, you know that there will be a plan that you don't know. And then will you be surprised? Oh, that's actually really clever.
Yeah. And at the end there, they're like, oh, put him in it. You don't have me in a glass box. Don't want to spoil it too much, but glass box at the end, you don't really see it coming. You're like, oh, what's going to happen here?
No, I didn't
see
it
coming.
And you're
like, and it's cleverer. But then you're thinking, oh, and also the main guy isn't dead. So maybe he can come back for another one. But you do feel like this is, I think they've settled in now after J.J. Abrams took over the production of this.
Yeah.
It feels much more like, right, okay, we know what we're doing with these characters and we're going to bring them on and we're putting a team together. This could last a long time. I reckon there could very easily be Mission Impossible 6. Tom Cruise not even in it.
Yeah.
Simon Pegg, Gemma Renner.
They were totally setting up a team that can act without Tom Cruise.
Yeah, or Tom Cruise can come in for a bit at the start and then go away.
Yeah.
Not be killed, but he can
but
go
not
away.
Not be out in the field so much anymore.
And I think you need someone like who was the actress who played this main character here?
Ferguson.
Yes, Rebecca Ferguson. She could easily take over as a main agent here as well. Simon Pegg, probably not, but Jeremy Renner could probably take over. I actually really like his character. He becomes like the conscience of the team in a way which nobody else has been able to stand up to Tom Cruise.
He's the analyst, so he actually has to give something to it,
a
bit more thought behind, is this actually the only way that we can do it?
But he didn't do any action in this movie.
No.
There was actually very...
But he was a
few
big,
action set
big
pieces.
Role in it, because he had to hold everything apart and together and people away from
each other.
Ethan Hunt to...
He had to do politics stuff as well.
He did the politics.
I do like that.
Important.
I do like that they had... Let me just bring in here as well. So who was... Oh, yeah, Alec Baldwin. In all these movies, they kind of get in an older actor. They had... They had John Voight in the first one, although he was more involved, but they, Sir Anthony Hopkins, he was in the second one as the director. And I was like, well, I don't really like him. Who else? The John Wilkinson was in for one of them. And who was there was another character who came in. Morpheus. What'd you call him? the
Luther.
No, not Morpheus. No,
I don't know who.
Not Morpheus in the.
He was the.
I can't remember the actor's name.
He was the secretary.
Yes, he was another secretary. But yeah. they have a new every movie they have a new secretary. But I'm actually thinking, you know. Compared to all of the others, I could actually see Alec Baldwin coming back to be the secretary.
Maybe
again.
if you look on the Alec Baldwin, if he's also in pre-production of
Maybe. I-6. Well, I should have a look at Mission Impossible 6, which will probably be out in another few.
Just click on. Well, his name.
I'll click on Mission Impossible 6 here and see what comes up. If these which actors are signed up for the next one. I really like the bad guy in this one, and this actually makes me think. Okay, this guy knows what he's doing. Like this director, this writer knows what he's doing with the bad guy.
Yeah,
you don't need to see the bad guy doing bad stuff to people. Although we did see it a bit, but you just have to have someone who can act really mean.
Yeah, and have a really crazy look in his eyes.
Yeah. And you've got these other bad guys, the bone doctor, if his name was called.
And also there, you just need to show his instruments.
Yeah.
And you showed
a
suitcase full of knives and other things that you think like, oh shit, he can do really bad things with those kind of stuff.
And at the end, we get a good knife fight, which is pretty good too.
Yeah.
Which you thought was a bit too much, but let's have a look at Mission Impossible 6. What's coming up in the future? We have details.
Oh, yeah. Look, Ferguson is coming back.
Yeah, Rebecca
and
Ferguson.
And Tom Cruise, what a surprise.
Tom Cruise, Ethan Hunt as Ethan Hunt, Rebecca Ferguson and Ilsa Faust, rumoured. Though. But that's exactly, nobody else there, just the producers, J.J. Abrams and the writing and directed by the same guy. I actually think it's good because I reckon he could put more of his own stamp on this movie.
Yeah.
Like wrest control a bit more back from Tom Cruise for it not to be so much Tom Cruise focus, actually bring it around. But I enjoy Simon Pegg back, Ring Rhames, Jeremy Renner.
Cool.
They're all good. They're all good characters. Right then, let's wrap it up. Let's do the list. Which one did you like? Let's go backwards. Which one did you like the least? Which one was your least?
Two.
Yeah, by easily. Next along, which ones? You don't have to...
Three.
You think three?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that three. When I remember seeing three and really, really enjoying it. And now I see them in line, I actually see it is the second weakest.
I mean, it is good, but it has not the same strength and...
Yeah. Okay, next up, what do you think? For me, it's number four, directed by Brad Bird, Ghost Baldekel, which is I thought was a good one, but there's a few. It gets a bit silly in some moments, and where does it all end in that one? That's where it goes to India. I think the India stuff is a little bit silly, and they've got to stop their satellite. It feels a bit too big, you know. It feels a bit too immediate and a bit too big, which it's fine, but not so great. I then think, what about you? Is it the same for you? Number four?
Yeah, number four.
So which one did you like best out of the first and the fifth one?
I still think. The fifth is on the second place and the first is on the first place.
I'm going to switch it around for you. I actually think it's the other way around. Only because this last one is just a more fun movie.
All right.
And I like the tension in the first one, but this balances the tension out a bit more with the jokey stuff. I think they found a cast of characters. The first one becomes too much about Tom Cruise and a sulky female character. And a bad guy, and then the ending I don't like at all on the train. Here, I really enjoy the ending. I think this is the strongest ending. They end in the same place. If you realize, this one goes back.
Yeah.
Where the office that the bad guy is looking out at across the River Thames is in the same spot where they
have
that they arrived in the helicopter pad that was there in that same spot. Yes. So I like it how it comes back round, and I like the way that number five brings the best stuff from all of the movies. It brings the tension from the first one. Yeah. It brings some fun motorcycle chases and some other stupid stuff from the second one. From the third one, there's a whole there's this thing and you've got to steal it for us and bring it and deliver it to us.
Yeah.
And they did it in this one. They just did it in a more intelligent way, actually in a better way.
Yeah.
The tension of the stuff with the Prime Minister, I thought was really good. It uses that's I think the only time they use the mask in this one, and they use the mask in the best way, I think.
Did they only use it once?
Yeah, it was they only used one mask in this.
Oh, right.
And it really paid off.
And so
really
that one off. Had really a big meaning.
Yeah, yes, they
but
saved
I
it
knew
all up.
It immediately when they
of
went
course.
in there,
yeah,
that it wasn't the real guy. Although I think he did a really good job.
Yes. Because you can also see he didn't know what he was meant to be answering. He didn't know what was going on there. It's like, well, why does this? And he kind of talked himself back around to it and stuff. So I'm going to put the fifth one, even though it's the one which is least recognizable from the director, it's the most Mission Impossible-y for me.
Yeah.
Because it brings all of the best stuff from all of them. Even the worst movies, this brings the, it kind of brings out the better stuff of it. And it, like I say, the fourth one, which is quite a lot of jokiness with Simon Pegg and Jeremy Renner playing off each other. And
he's totally putting more of the comedy thing in it.
There's comedy in this one, but there's more tension. There's actually like the tension between the characters is higher. Anyway, I wanted to finish up this episode within 1 hour, and we've just gone 5 minutes long, so we did do a bit more than 10 minutes per movie. Hopefully, you've enjoyed this Christmas special. Nothing to do with science fiction, nothing to do with books,
but with movie,
but with movies. But we thought we would do it was Juliana's idea to do a Mission Impossible. I must admit, watching this on Blu-ray. Really good quality. I really enjoyed the surround sound.
Very much.
I'm getting a bit... The thing is, I'm getting a bit spoiled by Netflix. We watched something on there, but it's just stereo sound that comes out of the TV.
I'm sure we couldn't make it so it comes out the stereo.
Maybe. Well, we'll look it out. Maybe we can feed them. Anyway, I don't know how it works, but yes, the surround sound and really high quality. There was never a moment... In fact, the third one, I actually think the quality of the third one was the worst, actually, but maybe that was just me looking at it. Anyway, Blu-rays are good. We'll give them to your parents tomorrow for Christmas, which is quite a handy way on. And that's it. You can follow me on Twitter. I'm at Luke Burge. And Juliana is at J-U-K-U Berlin. U-K-U Berlin.
Right.
For Juliana Kunzendorf Berlin, because that's where she lives. And so that's it. Thanks a lot for listening. And we'll see you in the new year.
Goodbye.